Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I have returned. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, it is the chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Woohoo!
Good to be back.
How are you, Jason?
The streak,
yes.
The streak continued. My stunt casting of David Lohr as guest host worked out.
Yes, it was good. We went to the bullpen.
Yep.
I believe Lohr is a righty, so we brought him in.
Yeah, I sort of picked my replacement there. I felt really, I was like, no, these guys are really good together. What have I done? It's like a little too good of a choice there. But that was, it was a lot of fun to listen to that. It was fun to listen to TVTM just as a listener for the first time since the old days. It was also fun to hear you guys talk briefly about the old days and funny voices and all of that. And
we got into the olden days. Yes, we did.
That was pretty good. So that was that was all good. And you know, you conspired against me and are trying to dream of terrible things for me to watch, which is, you know, you'll get yours. You'll all get yours. But no, that was a lot of fun to listen to. And thank you so much to David Lohr for sitting in for me. I'm sure the opportunity will come again when I'm out somewhere and he can parachute in and tell you stories about exposing his, you know, 13-year-old kids to Magnum PI, things like that.
We were all over the map.
Out there in Pawnee, Indiana, or wherever it is.
Yes, he's Pawnee, Indiana.
He is essentially Pawnee, Indiana. I've been to his house. He's not kidding. He is not exaggerating.
That's awesome.
So, so I'm back from Europe. I didn't watch any TV. I realized I didn't watch any TV while I was in Europe at all. It used to be, I think I might have said this before, first time I went to the UK, I turned on the TV, a lifetime of watching British television in the US. I turned on the TV, and what was on but an episode of Friends, and then I turned off the TV, and that was it. So I didn't even watch anything, because we get all that stuff over here now. I don't need to see it. It all comes on over. So I didn't do any TV watching while I was gone.
That's good. That's probably good. You want to stay away from that. You're a busy guy. You got to talk tech.
Yeah,
technology.
Exactly. And drink beer, talk technology. That's what we did in Ireland for a week, and
it was pretty
sweet. Actually, it was pretty good. Killarney. That's out in the west.
Oh, I've been to Killarney. Yes,
that's beautiful. Just absolutely beautiful. The hotel was right on the lake that's at the national park there, and it was just gorgeous and rainy the whole time. But it's Ireland. What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, that's so
I
believe Killarney, if I'm not mistaken, isn't Killarney the home of the black? That's where you get the black stone from.
I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe so. That's good. Good Irish knowledge there, Mr. Goodman. What should we talk about? You wrote a thing on The Hollywood Reporter about Louis coming back for season 5. The great. Is it still great?
It's still really great. It's and you know, I love that show, and every time it comes out, like, you know, every time the season starts, I'm thinking, okay, well, is he just going to do something that seems average? I don't know.
Yeah, surely he can't keep up this level that he's been on.
You would think that. And then, you know, I really loved it because I loved last year and I vowed last year. I think I did a little thing. Either I did it on Twitter or I wrote it. My brain is now dead about that. But I said, look, this is not a series that you can deconstruct episode to episode, but it's not really built like that. And people were doing it and then saying, oh, it was a bad season. Then it was a controversy season. Then it was a great season. I was like, just let it play out and then find out at the end what he's going for and what he's going to do. And this one seems, and I thought last year was a fantastic season. And this one too, there's only going to be eight episodes this season. It's kind of a condensed, but they're not running them back to back. Thank God. I didn't like that part last year. But yeah, so I watched the first four and, you know, it's so hilariously all over the map, Jason, because, you know, there's an episode that's and you know, and the humor is all over the map too. He has stuff that is so dark, like depressing, and then he has this elongated poop joke, and I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe that you're turning this. And then where he goes with that joke, the joke keeps going, and he's with his daughters, and you're thinking, oh my God, I can't believe that and then it turns into this amazing. He has this great ending to it, which was very funny. And he does, he does jokes that are you just don't see coming, and also some of the topics. And when I wrote my review, the third episode, I believe, there's humor in it, but it's really an episode about meeting this very unlikable cop named played by Michael Rapaport, and their night together. The whole half hour is basically their night together, and it starts out like Louis is just suffering from this guy. He couldn't tell him he didn't want to hang out, and the guy got forced into hanging out with them, and everything goes wrong. And then you think it's just going to be like Louis enduring this big lug who keeps punching him, you know, come on, dude, and he's like a frat boy kind of thing. And then it just goes absolutely dark, and you don't see it coming, and it's such a big tone shift. And I love that episode because it's a standalone. I mean, I've watched four, so maybe he comes back in the other four, but really it kind of opened and it closed as a little one-act play about a night that goes really dark. And I love that kind of stuff. And then he's still in his relationship with Pamela. And I will tell people to hang in there. I mean, you don't have to hang in there. If you're a Louis fan, you're going to love it all. But on the fourth episode, there is like all the plates are spinning, Jason. He's got very funny written jokes. He's got visual jokes. His physical humor. It's just – it's all there. And it ends with, as I said in my review, in this really funny shot that is also simultaneously really – has filled with melancholia. And I'm like, only he does shows like that. Like I was laughing, I was crying laughing during that episode. And then it ends and you're laughing at the joke, and then you're looking at Louis, and there's a visual joke to it that's kind of sad. And I was like, wow, I love this show. So there you go.
And it's unlike, I mean, I feel like it's unlike any show on TV, maybe ever, in the sense that, you know, most TV shows are their collaborations. There's the stars, you know, the writers, the directors. Louis, it's like Louis C.K., that is his show. If there's ever a TV show that is a product of a single person, or, you know, percentage-wise, it's got to be Louis. Like
absolutely.
That's him. I mean, I believe, you know, he doesn't just write it, but he directs it. And he I don't know if he's editing some of them or all of
them.
He's
editing
anymore.
Them all, yeah. So
just, I mean, on his laptop. Like, I mean, it is his thing. He makes it, and that and FX basically just says, you know, make us some shows, and you get this, and then you get somebody who's at the top of his game. And it's interesting, I think this is the sort of thing where, you know, in the 70s it would have been like Woody Allen, it's like, well, go make some movies, but in this modern era instead it's FX saying, Louis, just, you know, go make some shows. And the technology is there where he can do this, you know, himself in his, you know, in his apartment, basically,
right,
with his laptop, and he can edit the shows there. And it's just kind of amazing to see that, because it's, you know, no TV or movie is truly a singular vision, but it feels like this is the closest a TV show is ever going to come to that.
I totally agree. And there is, I mean, just as an aside, there is a direct lineage between Woody Allen.
No, Louis, I mean, they seem the most alike in terms of the kind of the art they're creating. And I mean, and we know a lot about Woody Allen as a person, and we don't know as much about Louis C.K. as a person. But in their art, in their work, there is definitely some sort of similarity there, which is really interesting. And I know that Amazon announced, we talked about it, Woody Allen's going to do a show for us. It's like, you know, I imagine that Louis is kind of like, what if Woody Allen did a show, you know, in the 70s using these constraints, which would have been impossible then. But this is what it is instead of making a movie every year, what if we let you make, you know, eight half hours? Or 10 or 12 or however many you want, just make them.
Right.
Seems to be his freedom, is just, and do whatever you want. And so he does.
He's just, boy, I tell you, he's one of a kind.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. The show, I don't know. The show is singular and original. Yeah. And I don't know. And I would point people, by the way, and this is not just a tout THR. Lacey Rose did this amazing cover story this week on Louis C.K. And we basically did we basically set it up. She interviewed him for a really long time, and there's different angles to it. But she let the whole thing basically be in his his words,
as told to Lazy Rose by Louis C.K. Yeah,
And there's two, and it's really kind of interesting. he when he's talking about, and I really want people to read it, but I do want to quote a couple of outtakes. And one of them is that it's really funny because he's only getting like, you know, he says he was only getting, he's probably still getting a little bit more, but they're paying him about $200,000 a show, which, and he says, quote, which is insane. And it's just gone up in little tiny increments. And then he's doing a show with Zach Galifianakis. And there's a little quote in here where he said, this is Louis C.K. talking. He says, as we negotiate deals for the other shows we produce for FX, like Baskets, which is Zach Galifianakis, I can't believe what these people are getting paid. It's really weird to me because they're like, this amount and not a penny more for Baskets. And I'm like, what? That's fucking twice what we get on Louis. And so that's kind of amazing. So it's that read is really amazing. But I wanted to quote this last part of it, and he's talking because, you know, just like in the show, Louis C.K., he's also a divorced dad of two girls, and you know, he's got this great quote. Well, all of it's a quote, right? Because it's his own words. And he's talking about how, you know, he doesn't do it for the Emmys, but it's nice that the kids get to see that. This is his quote. I'll read it all the way through. It's so, and it's a great way to end the story. He says about his girls, but I also make them aware of what it takes to get these places. I talk to them about work, and I hope that they both have shitty minimum wage retail jobs when they're old enough. I really try to be aware of not letting them grow up weird or spoiled, which is easier to do here in New York than it is in Los Angeles. My 13-year-old daughter leaves the house at 7:15 every morning and takes a smelly city bus to school way uptown. It's like 8 degrees out and it's dark and she's got this morning face on, and I send her out there to take a bus. Meanwhile, my driver is sitting in a toasty Mercedes that's going to take me to work once both kids are gone. I could send her in the Mercedes and then have her come back and get me, but I can't have my kid doing that. I can't do that to her. Me? I earned that fucking Mercedes. You better fucking believe it. And that's how it ends. And it's just like, it's amazing, right? I love that. It's like, he's like, yeah. And the whole story is about how he struggled for so many years. And as he notes, he's had 42 years of struggle and 5 of good. He's 47 now. So he's like, yeah, a lot more bad years and struggling than good years. But I love how he's like not letting his fame go to his daughters, but he's also comfortable enough to say in an interview, yeah, I got a Mercedes that takes me to to a driver who takes me to the set and back, and I could have my daughter take that. But it's just
well, I love that line, I can't do that to her, because usually you'd hear a parent say, oh, I can't make my kid ride on a bus, I'm gonna drive right. her up there. And he's like, no, I cannot do that to her, of having her be in a Mercedes driven by a driver, because he's thinking long term, right? Which is, this is totally gonna mess her up. Her dad is already super famous and makes a lot of money, so her life is already fundamentally different. And he's like, how do I minimize this? How do I keep it from totally screwing them up?
It's such a great, such a great thing. And so people, you can find that on THR.com. And
yeah, it'll be in the show notes, which are at theincomparable.com/TVTM/29. This is episode 29.
Woo-hoo!
Or in your podcast app, you can probably see it if you scroll in the app you're listening to right now.
Yes, we're all over the map.
We are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of HBO stuff is happening. I thought we should talk about a little bit. Game of Thrones is coming back. I'm really excited about that.
Yes, I huge fan of that. I did a review of it that was interesting. I talked to the people at I had an email conversation with the people at Metacritic, because somebody noted that my review was ranked a 70 on Metacritic, and I was like, well, I really love the show, but yeah, I can see how hard it is for those guys to put a number on it, because I start by saying, here's the negative part of Game of Thrones, and that is, I worry that they're too bloated with story, and you know, it's you know, it's, they're only being able to tell it in 3-minute chunks, and my whole point of the review was, it's a great series, I love it, they should be making 13 episodes instead of 10, and I do not believe for a second any of the many excuses that both the creators, writers, and HBO make for that series. None of them are actually believable at all.
Yeah, because now they're saying, oh, well, we can't do more episodes because there's just not enough time. It's too complex a shoot as it is.
Yeah, it's
not
ridiculous.
Enough time, really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Come on. Many of the constraints that they're working against are self-inflicted, because they have a very small writing staff, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and that's just BS. HBO is printing money. They can make 13 episodes if they want.
Your point is, too, because I read your story and we'll link to it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. your point is that it's a lot about narrative, like, momentum, that there are all of these different stories and they're all good and that's what makes the show good and they're rich and interesting. But if you can never tell more than a tiny fragment in any given episode and then you have to stop until the next episode, you know, the show loses momentum. And it's totally true. That is my least favorite thing about the show. And I love the show too, is it feels like that you never can afford to spend a lot of time with any of the one storylines because you will run out of shows essentially. And so everything gets chopped up in a blender and, you know, it's good stuff in the blender, but you know, it would be nice if there was, I'm not going to extend the blender metaphor. It would be nice if there was more room for it to breathe so that you could have more episodes where you spent actually like a lot of time with one particular set of characters, and they just can't afford to do that with the story that they're telling and all of these different settings that they're telling them in.
Yeah, it's you know, but I still love it. I still I burned through four episodes, and of course when you finish you want more.
Yeah.
And knowing that there's, and I always rewatch them when they come out because it's, you know, they send us a kind of a lower grade DVD version.
Do you still get so you shared your screeners with me way back in the first season of this, and mm-hmm. I remember them fondly because they were in they're obviously standard def, not HD,
right.
and the effects weren't done.
No, the effects are not done.
Yeah.
There's still something. Those were really early ones that we got. And it's funny because I was behind this group of critics who were complaining to HBO that their screeners were really muddy and messy.
Yeah.
And I think I told you this, that when we complained to them, and I actually at press tour went right to the head of HBO and said, "Dude, look, this thing for the Cinemax one for Steven Soderbergh's show. Can't remember the hospital drama, but I was like, this is super messy. You've really got to like fix this. And when they looked into it, they realized that somewhere in New York, they had actually been using a company that was making copies of copies. They were not sending the original out. Oh, so it was just the most Xeroxed version, and they were appalled, and they fired that place, and they lectured everybody to make sure that you're drawing off the original, et cetera. But yeah, they're not as good, the Game of Thrones ones, especially like they don't do the opening credits are very lo-fi. Mm. So when it comes out every week, I record it and I watch it and I geek out of it. But yeah, like, you know, part of it, like this year, as I said in the review, I know you're going to link to it, that, you know, Daenerys seems to be like a pretty big moving part going forward. And after four episodes, you get the sense that that's kind of where they're going. Yet if you put all her little pieces together in those four episodes, you get maybe a 15-minute, 20-minute story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, 4 hours in, I got 20 minutes of Daenerys, basically. Not enough.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. We've been complaining about this since first season, but it is funny that they can't expand the canvas a little bit more. Or you know what? Give us 10 episodes and have them all be a little bit longer. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. They could do that as well because they don't have any constraints. And it's funny because people who do pay attention to this will sometimes look at their DVR and they're like, whoa, wait a minute. 54 minutes? You're going to leave 6 minutes on the table?
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. But look, at the end of this run, the big decision is whether they're going to go 7 episodes, which is what Benioff and Weiss, the writers, want it to go. Or are they going to go maybe till 10 seasons? Episodes.
Yeah.
HBO would love them to basically go indefinitely and even into 10 if they could.
So my theory is, and I think we talked about this earlier, like a month ago, my theory is they're saying 7 seasons and then they're going to start breaking it down. And like at the end of next year or the year after, they're going to be like, oh yeah, we need more time. We've got too much story. I think they're fooling themselves. I think they're like, oh no, we've got a couple years story and then we'll be done. And I look at the pace of their storytelling and I think, no, there's no way. There's just
right.
No way. If you think you're going to wrap this story up in 7 seasons, you're crazy. You know, either that or your wrap up is really disappointing because it feels like you're not even at the point where you're bringing everything together. Like this season, things start to come together in part, but mm-hmm. even then, knowing from the books, you know, that they're pushing some characters across the sea and there's more interaction with Daenerys than there has been before. But, you know, it's not even close. So if they think that they're going to do 7 seasons and be done, I don't believe them. I think they're fooling themselves and they're going to get there. I think they want to fight they want to put it out there because they want HBO to be like, we're supportive of what you whatever you want to do. And they're like, good, good, good. They're supportive. And then they'll see how long they think it's actually going to take. That's my guess, is that this is more like, give us room. We can't commit right now. But I think they're fooling themselves if they think they're going to be done in 7 years.
I think you're right. And the funny thing too about that is, like, if you're both being respectful of each other and feeling each other out for what's possible, because, you know, there's a lot less communication between network and showrunner in the big picture idea than people actually think there are. I mean, I'm sure there is talk of that, but I bet there hasn't been, like, talk for a really long time about what they're going to do. But it's kind of funny that HBO has already put out there, which is like a preemptive thing.
And take all the time you want.
Right. They're like, take all the time you want. And then they said, but, you know, we're not really interested in making movies,
right?
Which is great. Like, I love that. Like, that sort of thing. Like, don't think you're going to end it and then say, I can wrap up the last two books or whatever with movies. HBO is like, no, we don't want that.
Yeah. So how do you feel about more seasons of the successful show that you're doing?
Yes.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And I should say to the listeners out there who are going to geek out with us on Game of Thrones that, like last season, I'm going to do a podcast about every episode with
Woo-hoo!
A cast of characters. So you can check that out. TheIncomparable.com. It'll be in the TV podcast along with the ones we're doing about The Flash and Arrow, and maybe somebody's going to do something about Daredevil. I don't know. Not if Tim is involved.
I'm certainly not going to be the one.
Alan Sepinwall liked it. Some people like it, but I haven't seen it yet. I saw the first 5 minutes of Daredevil, and I was intrigued. Although your mentioning to David Lore about the blood porn and the like, super ultra violent kind of thing. On one level, I feel like I like that idea that superhero stuff can be too clean, and it's like you remember, like, well, you didn't, as you said last week, you didn't watch a lot of TV when you were younger, but like the A-Team always bothered me because they fired guns all the time and nobody ever got shot, and it was like, this is really violent and yet there are no consequences to any of the violence. So I like the idea that this is a show where there are fights and like they're actually doing damage. I think that's a cool idea. At the same time, super violent stuff, it's not really my cup of tea. So,
me neither. And that is in there. I will only say that in last week's podcast with David, I did riff more about, you know, the first three episodes I saw, he was just in this little, or as I joked, a smart wool.
Yes, that's right.
Which is, you know,
it's wicking. You got to wick away the blood.
It's wicking away.
Yeah.
And then somebody joked on Twitter that, like, oh, all of a sudden they come out with the the picture
costume.
Of the suit. He does have a suit at some point.
He does. So, he does. Yeah. They were playing coy with that. I get that, which is like, we think the suit is kind of, it's a superhero suit. It's kind of dorky. We want people to understand that the show is gritty, so we're not going to lead with the superhero suit, but that's where they're going with it. Anyway, we'll see. But regardless of what's happening with Daredevil, I am going to do the Game of Thrones Snap Judgment podcast thing, so people should check that out if they want to hear me talk about Game of Thrones with cast of characters.
I think that would be great, and I think you should talk about Daredevil. I will say, this is my last, because, like, you know, maybe it gets better on the episodes, and also it, from your perspective or comic book perspective, it'd be kind of interesting. But my last thing that I will say, which is is kind of an inside baseball thing that people in TV who listen to this podcast might be interested in. So I did the review. Obviously, didn't really like it. A lot of damaging words in there.
Yep.
And within 24 hours, I get an email that says, "Can we clear this quote? Can you clear this quote for us?"
Oh my God!
And it was like massively entertaining. And I went back to my review and I'm like, where did I say that it was massively entertaining? And it had so many caveats between the two. You know, it was like, while some people might find the show massively entertaining, what it really is blood porn and blah, blah, blah. And so I texted back. I'm like, do you really think that that is an accurate reflection of the review? Because I don't. So you cannot use that quote.
No. Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah, that's too funny.
That is amazing. Well, I'll check it out and I'll report back. I don't think this is going to be at CSI Cyber level, but I who knows? But I'll check it out and report.
Oh,
back.
we definitely need you to watch it and check back and let's hear your thoughts.
All right. Also premiering on HBO this weekend is Silicon Valley, coming back for its second season, which, you know what, I'm kind of excited about it.
Yes, I'm excited about it too. I think that show is going to really move forward. I thought it was a pretty astonishing freshman season. Looking forward to that. Have not seen all the episodes yet. That's coming back at the same time that Veep comes back. Which, you know, now it's going into, I think, fourth season now. And it's just, that's such an amazing show. It found, I loved the first season. People found the first season a little bit slow to get into. And I think the series really took off as far as both viewers and influence in the second season. And then the third season was fantastic. So this should be amazing. There was news today that THR broke some news today, which is nice, that the series creator, Armando Iannucci, will be moving onward next year to do other things. Not completely surprising, because he did mention that he wanted to do that. And also, remember, he's British. They don't really buy into this. Let's make a series and keep it on the air for 10 years.
Yeah,
he's not that excited about that.
And but, when you throw in the thick of it, he has literally been doing this show for like 10 years.
Absolutely. He's done enough, and he wants to go back and do some movies. He also has another TV idea. But in no way is he like abandoning the show or distancing himself. He'll still have some input, and the new showrunner will be coming over from Curb Your Enthusiasm. So it's in very good hands. I wouldn't worry about that.
It is 2005 was the first series of Thick of It, so he's been doing this 10 years now.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't blame him for wanting to do something else.
And in British years, that's 25 years.
that is endless in British years. I was there. And it aged me.
It aged you. You're like, I feel like I've been here for six episodes. Yeah,
you know,
your time.
I was in Britain for 7 days, and they said it was 3 weeks, because, you know, they get like 2 days into a week and they're like, yeah, this series is over, and then just move on to another series.
Absolutely.
It's their way with all things.
It's like dog years.
Silicon Valley is funny because it's you know, I have and we have talked about this before. I have my criticisms of it, because I feel like it didn't necessarily satirize some of the things that deserve to be satirized about Silicon Valley. Covering the tech industry, there's so much to paint with. There's so many things to make fun of, and I felt like they were kind of, that first season was like, you know, even Mike Judge, his short time in the tech industry like 10 years ago, his thinking about it for Office Space, stuff like that, or 20 years ago. It was like all the easy stuff. And I'm hoping that they can crank it up a few notches in terms of really being even more kind of scabrous about how there's so much awful things in Silicon Valley that they could make fun of. But with my criticisms aside, I have to say, I don't know if there was a show that made me laugh harder last year than Silicon Valley. It is legitimately funny, with criticisms aside about what it should be targeting. Just so funny. Incredibly funny. So
just so funny. And, you know, it's good. We TV Talk Machine will benefit from the fact that you will be checking in not only in something that you right up your alley, which is Silicon Valley and the tech world, and my alley, which is TV. We can talk about that. But also, like, you're a comic book guy, so you can check back in with Daredevil. We got it covered with this TV tech mix.
Yeah, I feel like I cover some of those things that you're like, nope. Yeah. Nope, not gonna. Nope,
nope. Not a thing.
Nope, it's not a thing for me. It's a thing for me. It's not a thing for you. Like Black Mirror too. You know, you should probably catch up on that sometime.
I need to do that. Yeah, I laughed. I had this conversation, Jason, with someone about what do you do in your free time? I'm like, ah, ha, 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 ha. What free time? Yeah. I watch television shows that I'm you know, I'm clearly being paid to, but in my quote unquote off hours when I should be watching a movie or something or going to a movie. I tend to just look at my DVR and weep about how many hours are still on there. And then, but yeah, I haven't even caught up with stuff like with Black Mirror, which is something we talked a little bit about this last week too. I just want to, you know, even as a TV critic who watches a shit ton of TV, I still don't have it all covered myself.
It's these times of confusion. I'll tell you, there's just too much
times of confusion.
Gotta bring that one back. It's baseball season now. That's another thing that you do with your spare time, I bet, is turn on a baseball game. You know?
Oh, right? Yeah. I've watched two of the Giants games, and I'm also, of course, as you know, very nitty-gritty into my National League-only fantasy baseball league.
Yes, and it's funny because I am in an American League. Boy, sports talk. Watch out. Everybody's just tuned out.
Watch out. There you go.
In my American League league that I'm in. So, you know, nerds. Yay.
Nerds.
And somebody out there is saying, you know what they're saying? That's not a thing.
That's not a thing. Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, Silicon Valley and Veep, that's a great 1-2 punch. Beep could be a spinoff of Silicon Valley.
Beep is a racing Beep. Thing. No, yeah. And that's those start this Sunday. Louis already started, but you can obviously catch up on that. Daredevil, you can catch up on Netflix.
Oh, I wanted, this is my European TV report. I do have a European TV report for you,
which
is the Europeans, they love the Netflix. And you know why they love the Netflix, Tim?
Because
shows on Netflix, Netflix shows, Netflix originals premiere simultaneously worldwide, which I did not know. So like if you're in the UK right now, you can watch Daredevil, the whole thing.
And
they're so sick of shows coming on the air in the US and them having to wait for some UK TV network to pick it up like 6 months later. And this is why apparently the UK is the number one market for BitTorrent for TV piracy, because they are really impatient. And so I talked to several people who use Netflix in the UK who love it, and Amazon Instant Video to a certain extent, because all that stuff is just is cleared for every market that those services are in around the world. So they'll sell Daredevil into some market where there is no Netflix. But if Netflix is there, apparently they just, all those shows show up. So I was saying, oh, you know, there's this Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And they're like, oh yeah, we saw it. I'm like,
wow.
Really? You've seen that already? He's like, yeah, it just goes on Netflix and we watch it. And I'm like, this is the future now where if the show is on, it's just on everywhere. And
worldwide.
So that was something that I didn't understand that I found out about. My friends that I stayed with in Scotland are Netflix watchers, and the selection of other stuff is very different in different countries, but all the Netflix originals, they set them up to be cleared worldwide. So that's
also
pretty awesome.
Also, a little known fact is the TV Talk Pain podcast is available worldwide immediately.
Restrictions.
No restrictions.
We haven't sold this format into other markets yet.
Yes, we might.
It's possible. If you're in Spain and suddenly the podcast is unavailable, that's because the new Spanish TV Talk machine will be happening. But until that day, we are broadcasting worldwide.
We are worldwide.
It's true. Talking about American TV, Mad Men is back. We talked about it 2 weeks ago you had written your piece about it, but you hadn't. There were secrets that you couldn't reveal, and I just wanted to check in with you about it because now that episode has aired. So now that you're free to talk about it, do you have anything more to say about where Mad Men? You know, what's the state of Mad Men and where it's going in this?
Oh, definitely.
Season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had to be very coy about that, and we'll link in the show notes to the deconstruction I did on the first episode, and it's it's really fascinating because. We now know it's. I guess we should tell people if they haven't watched this episode, they should probably close their ears at this point. But it's set in April of 1970, so it's basically 9 months ahead of where it left off in the first seven episodes, and things have changed a bit, not completely, but they've changed. But yeah, the series is still very much focused on. That sort of uncertainty of life. And Don, the first song, as I said in the review, is Peggy Lee's Is That All There Is, which I think should be the theme song for Mad Men. Because Don just realized he's never happy about anything. And, and that's such a great song. Is That All There Is to a Fire and Death and all this stuff. So, it's very much in Don's thing. But I would say, there are some really fascinating elements in there. There is a dream sequence. And then there's a sequence that feels like a dream when he talks to the a waitress in, and it's very dreamlike. So I'm hoping that going forward we'll still have these those moments. And I'm thinking we got six episodes left. I will reiterate that I don't think that everybody's going to stick their landings, because I'm not sure that's what's so interesting for Matt Weiner. You may not know what happens to Stan when the series is over, but Don and Peggy and the regular ones, you definitely will find out. And the other thing I would say, I don't want to give too much away because we'll link to the deconstruction, which goes very deep into this. But one of the things to look at that I noticed, just as an aside, is that now that everybody kind of has money from the merger, they don't want to work. They feel very. It's a very vague element to the first episode, but people were ready to leave work early. No one wants to put the time in anymore. Everybody's kind of paid out, and that's kind of an interesting way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there's six more?
There is six more. And yeah,
we'll count them down. I'm looking forward to seeing how that show ends, given that should be an interesting ending, given the way that story has been told and the fact that it is set in the past. I'm curious about that. Should be I love to see how shows end.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I mean, I think knowing where that ends is, or guessing where it ends is, I think it's sport for some people. People want to know, is Zion going to live? Is he going to die? I think that if I had to put my money on it, I don't know about whether he's going to live or die, but I bet you he's not going to be happy. Yeah. That's just going to be my goal.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. I still have a dream that we're going to see old Don Draper. We're going to see him like at 80 years old.
Oh, that would be that like a flash forward.
Yeah, like the like him at 80 years old in like 1995 or something like that. I don't even know when
that is. What
the
lovely
time it would be. I think that would be a lot of fun.
That is lovely. I totally want that to happen. I do hint in the thing, like I my guess is, you know, I don't know if he's gonna live or die, but my guess is that I'm hoping that he finds a little bit more, as far as how Mad Men should end, I'm hoping that Don, like, he's never going to be satisfied, but I'm hoping that he's like, you know what, this is enough. It may not be what I wanted. Is that all there is? But this is enough. And then I move on into the great unknown.
Want to do some listener feedback?
Let's do that.
This is actually kind of like an additional topic, because we got three notes from different listeners about the same subject.
Ooh.
So James Epler, in the 806, says big fan in the 806, says
that's a new one for us. 806 we haven't had.
Do you know where that is?
I do not. Alaska?
That is no close. It's the Texas Panhandle.
Oh,
looks like.
Wow. Okay.
Lubbock, maybe. Yeah. Lubbock.
Nice.
Amarillo. After an amazing start, Last Man on Earth has nosedived creatively. Is it beyond saving? Also, Steve from the 808 says, we found ourselves dismissing shows even if they have the slightest misstep, such as the recent annoyance of The Last Man on Earth. The show started out great and introduced Kristen Shaw was wonderful, but once Betty from Mad Men showed up, the show has become a bad one-note punchline. Not sure if Will Forte is channeling old SNL days or not, but the show has become very unfunny with Phil's feeble attempts to try and bed Melissa episode after episode. Curious if Tim has the same viewpoint. And Jackson in the 780 says, are you still watching Last Man on Earth? I gave up after four episodes. The premise wasn't being used for anything more than throwaway jokes and forcing characters together that otherwise don't belong. After that, it comes across as just another sitcom with extra awkward situations and characters that are hard to like. So three different listeners who, I gotta say it, took your strong recommendation for Last Man on Earth, which started really strong, and now are having second thoughts. What do you think?
Yes, they are absolutely 1,000% correct. It was renewed for a second season, and at that point, I probably should have done the rant that I started on Twitter when you were on your vacation. Well, you actually weren't on vacation. You were working. But when you were gone, I had a little Twitter rant about this very thing. And it was funny because it was kind of in the evening, and I threw it out there. And I basically said, the first tweet was, you know what? I think the first two episodes for sure, and also the third episode,
I agree,
were really excellently done. It was a really remarkable piece of television. And then I said, and then since then, not so much. And it exploded. I had critics, all kind, like four or five critics, including Alan Sepinwall and Emily Nussbaum, all of them chiming in with the same thing that, you know, the series is really flawed. And even more critics chimed in, and a lot of viewers. And I think that it's painful for me to even watch that show. I've done it, which is hard. You know, that was a pretty glowing review I had. I've never seen a show really take its ambition and crash it so spectacularly.
Lot of people, and I think you made this point too, a lot of people have made the point, like, if you've got that Will Forte, Kristen Shaw rapport, why bring January Jones in so quickly? I mean, yeah, like, you could bring her in and that upsets the equilibrium that you had, but they didn't use the equilibrium. Like, there was probably a whole lot to be mined from just the two people before you bring in a third character and a fourth character, right?
Yeah. And I said, arguably, you know, I would have loved to have seen 10 straight episodes of Phil by himself still.
Yeah.
Those were the best episodes.
Yeah. you know, yeah, and then you bring in Kristen Schaal, and then you bring Kristen Schaal, do another 10 episodes. Yeah. Every season, a new cast member appears in the last frame, right? And then you,
they're burning through. I mean, I do like the arrival of Mal Rodriguez. He's a great actor. He's done amazing work on the show, among many shows he's worked on lately. But yeah, I think that one of the people touched on the fact that, you know, the Phil character, you root for him. He's the last man on Earth, and he's stealing things from the White House and from all our museums, and it's kind of funny, and he's just trying to connect with people. But then he becomes a total dick.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want your character to become a dick. And they wrote him – it was amateur hour in the writing. They just made him be like this, you know, hound who's just trying to hound January Jones so he can sleep with her. And he's mean to – you know, there's a lot of fat jokes, a lot of ugly jokes, a lot of like – this is the hot babe, and of course I'd be interested in her. It felt like it's so juvenile, and it took everything that I could muster to watch the next episode and catch up. So I hope, you know, I will say this, during this rant, Twitter, and it went pretty big and went on for a long time, one of the directors, who I believe might also be getting executive producer credit, chimed in late saying, changes are coming. And it's not look. It doesn't look like it's, you know, you guys are talking about something that may not be there, which is great to hear. But I would posit that you've lost so many viewers now because you've made him an idiot. So,
yeah, it's a shame. I had that moment too, which is like this is an absurd show. But now a show that I bought into is not a show about Will Forte acting really stupid, attempting to sleep with January Jones.
Right.
And even a little bit of that, like when she expresses, January Jones expresses the fact that she hasn't been, you know, with anybody for a while and is feeling kind of amorous.
Right.
That part is funny because he's in this, it's like a comedy of manners, right? Like he just agreed to this ridiculous marriage with Kristen Schaal so that he can have sex with her, and then instead here's January Jones. That was funny, and then they spent an entire episode just making me hate him because he was not being clever. He didn't feel like a human being who was conflicted. He wasn't trying to like deal with it. He was just acting like he was in an Adam Sandler movie or something. It was really sad. So
it was really sad, and I don't know. Like I'm getting a paycheck, people, to watch television. So I will watch the next one. This feels very much like my CBS Cyber. CSI Cyber.
CSI Cyber, yeah.
I always say that, CBS Cyber.
That's okay. The C in CSI stands for CBS.
Yeah,
so
that's right. So I will continue to watch. And I still, you know, it's not too late. I may append something, a column along these lines of how disappointed I am. Because even if this person's right, this person who checked in, who's one of the directors, and saying, oh, it's going to go back to more like you thought it was going to be, hey, it's too late. We have too many choices.
Yeah, exactly. So. In this time of confusion, you have to move on.
Time of confusion.
Some more feedback. Curated TV on Twitter just threw in nice shout out to the early days of the TVTM on the last cast. That's true. little reference to Joe Garofoli and all of his voices. Of a dozen voices. Yeah, you never had David break out as Walton, which he was ready to do. Oh, what are you doing? When I was traveling with the dead. They told me, be quick, don't hurry. No, that was Coach Wooden. No, awful. I don't know. Anyway, I don't do a good Walton.
Your Walton is not your strong suit.
No.
You're too fast.
I'm too quick, but I didn't. But I hurried. What's problem is that your classic Bill Walton impression was very different. I always did a Bill Walton impression, but it was you do the this kind of voice, right?
Yeah,
like he's almost like he's Charlie from Maisie, right?
Yes. Yeah, the drums.
Whereas I always went the other way, where I would do the angry Walton, which was like, oh, a terrible call, because that was his NBA voice,
not his
traveling with the dead voice.
Yes, he always did that. Like he was outraged when he watched games.
So outraged, the calls were just, you know, beneath him. They were so bad. Anyway, but Joe does all the good voices. His
all 12 of them.
And his every time that I see Vladimir Putin on the news, I think, oh, Joe does that good Putin, which is really like the Count from Sesame Street. But they're very close. They're very similar.
By the way, and we should remind people too, because it's also TV related, that my version of Bill Walton, the deep voice, is very much Santa Claus from A Year Without a Santa Claus.
You're right. Yeah, that's true.
Remember when I discovered that? It was during the podcast, and I was at Christmas time. I'm like, oh my God, Santa is Walton.
It's just your Bill Walton. You haven't been doing Bill Walton at all. You've been doing Santa, Claymation Santa. Megan in the 402, who writes to us a lot, said, I've been meaning to check out Parks and Rec, and your recommendation a few episodes ago finally made me do it. I'm really enjoying it. In particular, I love Leslie Knope. I think she makes the top five of my favorite TV characters list. The rest of my top five, in no particular order, are Frank Pembleton from Homicide.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Lenny Briscoe from Law & Order. Rodney McKay from Stargate Atlantis. Come on.
Wow. Actually, that one I don't get.
He was unlikable. I liked that, ironically, about that character, is that he was completely unlikable. And Ilya Kuryakin from The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Wow.
Yeah, old school.
That was an eclectic list.
It is. I love spending time with all these characters. Who are some of your favorites? Do you have any favorites? I mean, Pembleton is actually a great choice. I loved Pembleton on Homicide.
Pembleton's Hall of Fame first ballot, I think. No doubt about that. That'd be one of my picks. Modern times, I think you got to go. I think you got to go Tony Soprano.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Don Draper is also one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. I also love Tina Fey's character, Liz Lemon.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. And of course I would also go with Jack Donaghy. So I would put both of those guys in there.
Yeah.
Into the Hall of Fame. But yeah, I think even if you go back, one that's certainly been in the news lately, you'd have to say Mulder and Scully.
Sure. Sure.
You know? Those are
I'm going to throw Mr. Spock.
Mr. Spock is good.
Put Mr. Spock in there. And you know what? I really love Stephen Root as Jimmy James on News Radio, which people have been talking about lately because it was the 20th anniversary of News Radio or something. I always love that show, but I love Jimmy James because he is the crazy billionaire who decides to buy a media company because he wants to mess around with it, which is just like Ted Turner and Rupert Murdoch. I mean, you could list so many billionaires who are like, yeah, I could have a radio station or a newspaper and I'd just hang around and screw it up. And that's what that character does on News Radio.
That was perfectly cast.
And he's Stephen Root, so good. Yeah.
So amazing. Yeah. So I would have him there for sure. I mean, Homer Simpson. A lot of classics in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you could go through that whole list of Simpsons. But yeah, there's a lot of really iconic characters. But boy, Frank Pembleton, that's a good pull.
That's strong.
That's a good pull. Yeah.
So thanks, Megan.
We could maybe expand that to another one. We should, one of our evergreen podcasts, we could do favorite TV characters.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
That was, we could do it because I love drafts. We could do it as a fantasy draft. How about that?
I love that
fantasy
too.
Fantasy draft of TV characters. That's a good one. I can't resist drafts. So Michael, who comes from sunny Northern Ireland. Okay, Michael
wow.
in Northern Ireland. That's his area code.
So he has no area code, but he is Northern Ireland.
He has a country code. Plus 44, I think, but no area code.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick note to highlight something that really bugs me when it happens in a TV show or a movie. The most recent occurrence was an episode of The Blacklist where a female character, Vanessa Cruz, spoke in English with a European accent, but when she had to pretend to be someone else, she spoke perfect English with an American accent. Another example is in season 8 of 24 when Doug Hutchison as an NYPD officer speaks fluent New York. However, when he was with one of his European baddie buddies, he spoke in fluent broken English. Does no one making these shows realize how ridiculous this is? He actually says, how daft this is, but I can't do an Irish accent. All the best, Michael. This is really funny. It's the, I have an accent. Oh no, I don't kind of trope, which you're right. It is kind of ridiculous.
Oh, that is great. I like daft too. Daft is a good word. We'll put that in our good word.
And it's realized
thing.
With an S. So does no one making these shows realize how daft this is? Well, that's not an accent. That's not a thing.
I bet when you were in Scotland, too. were you bugging your family over there, your residents who put you up with your bad Scottish accent?
No, I was really embarrassed to even attempt it because it's so bad. And
I didn't want to offend them. I have a friend used to work at BBC America, and I would do with that, and she's like, that's not even close.
I don't even know
what that is.
It's not a thing.
Yeah, so accents are tough. Of course, our most recent one was when we had Grace Point, right?
Oh, yeah.
And David Tennant, he didn't actually have an accent, as pointed out. He had a lack of an accent, which was not an accent.
No.
So you can't be in America and sound like water.
Where are you from, America?
I'm from America.
What part?
All over.
All of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
So I think that there's, I would say cynically that somebody probably did catch the continuity error there. And they thought, no, we're not reshooting that. Let's keep going.
So my wife and I were watching, we're way behind, but we're watching Broadchurch season two. And Marianne Jean-Baptiste is on it. And she was nominated for an Oscar, and she's an English actress, and she's speaking with an English accent. And my wife had this moment where she's like, no. She's an American cop. What do I know her from? And I realized it's Without a Trace, the show that was, I believe, almost entirely populated by people with fake American accents. Because it was like Anthony LaPaglia, who is Australian. I think Poppy Montgomery is Australian, too.
Yes.
And then Marianne Jean-Baptiste is English. So it's like, is there any American person on Without a Trace at all? Why even shoot it? Did they shoot it in America? They could have shot it in Sydney, for all we know, because it's all fake accents.
Yeah.
Fake. But now she's doing her real accent. Actually, seeing her and David Tennant, I was amused, because it's, Hey, it's fake accent people who are free to use their real accents now.
Isn't it better when they can use their native tongues?
You know, in Doctor Who, David Tennant's even doing a fake accent because he's Scottish, and in Doctor Who, he's doing an English accent. He's doing an estuary London accent as opposed to his Scottish. He obviously did not have the clout that Peter Capaldi has because he's Scottish, and they let him be Scottish. But David Tennant, they're like, nope. Do an English accent.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, there's some Doctor Who nerdery for you.
Yeah, we should do if we ever had the ability to have we need like an intern.
Yeah.
He'll do all the research for us. So we
David
need somebody
Lore
to
do it for us.
Yeah, so David Lore pull all the accents. We'll put them in a sound file, and then we'll buy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be good.
We should have like an ongoing, like a library of accents, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good.
So funny.
Anyway, thank you, Michael, in Northern Ireland. That was not a place I went to on this trip, although I think we basically flew over it on the way to Glasgow. Mm-hmm.
I was very close to it one time when I was in Ireland.
Yeah, sure.
I was very close to the border.
Mm-hmm. So Art from the 360, that's Western Washington. I had to make a comment based on some of your comments over a couple of different episodes. Uh-oh, we're in trouble. Tim in particular has described Person of Interest as a show somewhere between a guilty pleasure and a show he would never have thought he would have become involved with. I have to agree, for all of its silliness, I have come to love it and can't wait for the next episode. I think it's almost an accident when a show like this turns out to be so entertaining in spite of itself. But maybe not. I need a professional opinion. On the plus side, it has ambitious long arcs that take very creative turns. It has good-looking characters that aren't 32-year-old actors playing teenagers. It loses characters for whole seasons and brings them back, except for the dead ones, thank God, and even has a super dog. On the negative side, I don't count the basic premise as all that silly, but some of the plot devices seem to be made up by adolescents. The individual single episode plots are spotty. Reese has been shot so many times it's hard to believe he has any body parts left, and the conflicting morality of all lives matter versus the massive body count of faceless armed thugs and government agents alike is absolutely hysterical. And there is a super dog. I would love to hear Tim's thoughts on why the show grabs him when, as he says, life is short. Hey, you did say that just today. And there's a lot of good TV on right now. I wish I knew why it grabbed me. What do you think?
Oh, I know exactly why this one and Elementary and Blacklist grabbed me. Is I can literally turn my brain off.
Yeah.
I look at everything so critically from the get-go.
Right.
And I did critically look at those shows when they came out. And I believe I gave certainly the first two of those really good reviews. And sometimes you have to judge them for what they are, you know, especially when – like, you know, as a critic, not everything is a high-end cable drama. It's just not how it works. And I know some people are like, yeah, you should have that kind of philosophy when you reviewed, you know, when you reviewed Daredevil. I had to put it in its context. So those shows were just like, I think they were very good at what they did. They worked perfectly on CBS. But for me, I enjoy them because I don't have to think, you know?
Yeah.
In same way, like, in fact, in my Daredevil review, I said that I just watched two old episodes of Blacklist, and I felt I was more entertained by them because I wasn't hung up on the fact that, everybody has a little part you've got to overlook. But for me, I just couldn't overlook the part that no one's using a gun.
Well, I mean, you've said you got to buy in. Right,
you gotta buy in.
The buy-in moment for Daredevil is honestly, it's in that first scene where there's the cargo container and there's the guy with the gun who keeps picking up the gun and shooting him, and he keeps going like, "I hear a gun," and he jumps and he doesn't ever get shot. And yes. That's like, you got to either buy into that or you just got to move on. But
right.
Person of Interest, I've heard from a bunch of people who really love Person of Interest. So I only watched like the first half of the first season. I thought that this is fine. Mm-hmm. But I know people seem to like it. And I think it's this, like, it works for you on one level and then you don't have to consider it on the other level. That's the power of CBS too. Let me tell you, CBS is so popular.
Yeah. And also one of the basic things about television is that as much as, you know, people who listen to TV podcasts and you and I and our friends and our critic friends, whatever, as much as we're sitting down and nitpicking everything and really getting into like Mad Men deconstructions and whatever, most of the country watches television the way that God intended it, which is I just went to work all day and I just want to sit down, entertain me, total nirvana. Here we are now, entertain us. Let's sit on the couch, give me a show for an hour. I'm going to turn it off. And that's for a long time why, you know, that's why procedurals need to wrap up in 59th minute, because Americans said, oh, no. I'm not coming back next week, you know, because don't make me do that. It's too much effort. So for the most part, that's what happens. And when I watch those shows, I'm like, just entertain me. I got an hour to burn here. Go ahead. Entertain me.
Yeah, totally. Also, this was a funny PS from Art from the 360. He says, my wife and I started watching Fortitude based on comments from a few episodes ago. Beautifully shot and pretty interesting till it went off the rails in episode 6. Way off the rails. We will finish the series, but man, the dude that wrote this show needs therapy and he needs to stay out of my area code.
And that's it. We won't spoil what that was. But the show has been renewed. And I believe the finale was either last night or tonight. I can't remember. Fortitude, which we started off this television season with me down in January, down saying, you know what, here's a great drama, totally different, and it's Pivot and it'll never work. And I don't know whether it worked or not ratings wise they don't really release too much of that, but it worked enough for them to renew it again. So there you go. You can, everybody who didn't see the first season, you can now go back and just power through and then get ready for season 2
and wait for that episode 6 and I hope that guy stays out of your area code.
Right.
I have one final bit of listener feedback. It comes from David Lohr, who said, I said it last week on TV Talk Machine, and I say it again now, watching a late night network show, please stop with the games, more and better, and actual conversations. Please. So I thought that was really interesting. How much is a show the show, the format, and like having a talk show with talk, and you know, does a talk show risk kind of like falling apart if all that they ever do is bits?
Yes.
So
yeah,
I think that you guys talked about it, and I think that happened on some show or other again this week. And I think with James Corden, I thought this was a really good point. Is like, he's really likable, and those conversations are interesting. And there's a point where you don't want them to leave the couch, because it's like, maybe you guys could actually have a conversation and not go to some other comedy bit. So I thought
Almost like you wish that, you know, I mean, they script everything out. You have to, because it's live. You've got to fit everything in their slot. But you almost wish that there was some way that the director could say, you know what, we're going great on this couch bit. Let's stay here. Let's not go to that bit. You know, so that's,
we'll save that for tomorrow.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. I'm with David though.
Yeah. That's it.
Woohoo!
We covered a lot of ground.
We did. We were tight and bright.
That's right. This was full of information. So we're talking about the old TV Talk Machine. Listeners from the old TV Talk Machine are dead now because we have informationed them to death.
Their heads are spinning.
Yeah.
They were used to about 90 minutes of maybe one piece of information that might have been wrong.
In fact, probably was wrong.
Probably was wrong. I probably got the time or the day that it appeared wrong, and the rest was just basically impressions.
But here in our 29th consecutive week of the newfangled TV Talk Machine, full of information.
Uh-huh. Amazing. How about that?
I don't know. No, nobody could have believed it, but here we are.
I know. Defying the odds. 29 weeks in. Woohoo!
Yeah, that's right. Still alive. Still filling your heads with information and nonsense both. Let me tell you, let me give you the numbers. Here's where you can find us. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. Obviously, The Hollywood Reporter, THR.com will get you there. HollywoodReporter.com will also get there. He's got the Bastard Machine blog there. You can find us at TVTalkMachine.com. That'll redirect you to the incomparable site where this is. On Facebook, you can go to Facebook.com/TVTalkMachine and join the Facebook group and send us messages there. You can also, of course, tweet us at TVTM on Twitter, and I am at Jay Snell on Twitter. And that's it. So, Tim, pleasure as always. Good to be back. Nice to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Well, welcome back, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you, David, for filling in last
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. And I got a lot of TV to catch up on now.
You do. You yeah, do. Really and the do. Listeners are back. We're back to normal for the listeners. And then when we come back next week, well, I'm sure we'll have so much more to talk about.
I'm sure. And send in your feedback and we'll read that too. And you can more brain teasers about the best characters and things.
Exactly.
Know, throw those our way. All right. And we will see you all next week. And until then, thanks for listening. Goodbye.